What I'm going to do is share with you the value of not being average, different areas where you can be less than close to average. Obviously, you're all above average in many areas, or again, you wouldn't be here in the room. But I think sometimes the more we focus on like what's working for us in life and apply it to other parts of our life or a new joint venture or a new platform you're building, then the more success you can possibly have. So this is David Goggins. Many of you may know that he was a 330-pound bug exterminator pretending to be happy everywhere he went when he was really not a happy person. He was downing a bag of potato chips on the couch and saw a documentary on the Navy SEALs and running down the beach with a log on their shoulders. And he said, hey, maybe I need that. Maybe that's what I need in my life. I need something to really wake me up and be somebody different. He went to the Navy recruitment office. They laughed at him and said, you will never be a Navy SEAL. You'd have to lose 90 pounds just to apply for being a Navy SEAL. He then went and lost 90 pounds in 6 months. He had to go through BUDS training multiple times because he was a really horrible swimmer and fearful of water. But he became a Navy SEAL, and then he's now a fire jumper, and he's broken multiple world records for doing 3,000-plus pull-ups in a day. He's ran 300-mile races, lots of 100-mile ultramarathons. He sold millions of copies of his books. His first one is called Can't Hurt Me, and he's got a follow-up to that book as well. He's the definition of not average. And I'm going to explain many different ways where we can kind of apply this concept. But average just means, at best, if you're really good at being average, you get lost in the crowd and nobody pays any attention. No one answers your emails. No one returns your voicemails. You know, nobody wants this. Nobody wants average returns if you're an investor. Nobody wants an average amount of capital being raised if you're raising capital. Average is boring. There might be one of you, you know, snoozing right now. I don't see one up front at least. But I'm going to try to make this presentation not boring. That's my goal. Hope that none of you find it that way. One of my family members did a 10-hour workout at Orange Theory, and I recorded a video after seeing the response that he got, and that's what led to me creating this presentation, because it was the most popular video we created this year. And I was driving to the gym, and I just said how mind-blowing it was that not the general public, not the Wall Street Journal readers, but the followers of the Orange Theory social media page just trashed this person who worked out for 10 hours by doing every Orange Theory class they offered in a day. All negative comments, like 50 comments, not exaggerating, they're saying, why would they let him do that? What a liability. Why would a trainer let them do that? That trainer should be fired. They're going to get sued. Someone's going to see that, do 10 workouts, and have a stroke and die. That's going to kill someone. And really, I think it's going to kill someone if you don't work out 10 hours a day once a year. Maybe Orange Theory should require every member works out 10 hours a day once per quarter. Right? I mean, that'd be kind of cool. So I had the opposite reaction. It's just interesting that in our society in general, even filtered down to people that follow a athletic membership club, trash people who go above and beyond and work hard. I thought that was really interesting. I'm going to talk about that a bit. The average person, you know, dies at around 77. The average net worth in America, I looked up, is $745,000. Credit card debt of about $8,000. If you're a dentist or a doctor, average dental revenue is $640,000 for a practice. The average American male is not just a little bit overweight. They're very, very close on average to being obese with a BMI of 29.1 on average in America. So average is not winning. It's not freedom. It's not success. It's not what any of us want, right? Your spouse doesn't want it. Your kids don't want it. And if you want to be a symbol of success around you, the message you send probably shouldn't be sacrifice everything in your life, have no social life, have no health, and just work yourself to death because all that matters is money, right? It's probably not the image of success you want for yourself or the example you want to send to others around you. So this is the car I bought in college, as I mentioned earlier. I was driving back and forth a lot between Portland to work at a technology startup, helping them raise angel investor capital. So I just go to school Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I was off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So I'd be driving back and forth a lot on the highway. I didn't know the inside of my tires were kind of bald, so when it was raining and there's big ruts on the highway, I was going 65 miles per hour, spun around 3 times and crashed into a guardrail. I didn't die, obviously, but I could have. And that kind of woke me up to getting things done faster. Before that, I'd looked around and be like, what am I doing in Corvallis, Oregon, where there's nothing but cows and fraternities going to school? What am I doing with my life? Like, come on. That's when I started taking 23 credits a term. I had to get signatures from the dean of the business school and the administration office at Oregon State University. And that's how I got out of school a year early. It kind of woke me up. Then in Singapore, I was at the Sands Marina Resort. If you've watched the F1 race in Singapore or been there, you can't really miss this iconic building. It's got the tallest infinity pool in the world, as you can see right here. And I remember looking out at the buildings and thinking, like, who built, like, that building over there, this big, blue, shiny, modern building? That's huge. I mean, whoever did that has done way more than I have so far in my life. And I was just about to have my first kid, and I thought, okay, I need to do something bigger, like these people that built these big buildings. I had, like, maybe one margarita in Clark Key, maybe one or two Coronas at most at this resort. Next morning, I had my most important meeting of the trip. Before I left, I was meeting with a multi-$100 million Singapore family, and I was flying out at like 11 a.m. I woke up at like 7:30, and I was like, oh, damn, I just missed the meeting. I tried to reschedule it. We couldn't, and so I messed up that meeting. I thought, what a dichotomy of ideas to be like, oh, I want to do something really big. And then the next morning, I oversleep. I was like, oh, so stupid, right? So then I thought, okay, 3 months, I'm not going to drink any alcohol. I need more energy, not less. I'm about to have kids. If anything, I just need extra energy. Bad timing with a whiskey sponsor right before me on this message. But, you know, I just didn't miss the alcohol. So I haven't drank now for 12 years, not because it was a massive problem, but this made me kind of like upset at myself. So that was like one turning point, one little thing that makes me a little bit different. This is a picture from Nepal. I went with one of my investors who sold their dental practice. I went with my brother, Charlie, who's the more high energy version of myself you just saw on stage earlier, introducing Michael. And we went here, and with my wife as well, and we went here to Nepal and did Everest Base Camp. It's a 10-day trek. We had an awesome time. It's probably one of the best trips of my life and not super expensive. I would encourage everyone in here to go and do it. We saw people of all ages, all physical shapes, doing it. It was just a great time. There's a few pictures from that trip. We bought some fox fur hats. It gets pretty cold at 19,000 feet, so created our own little kind of wolf pack of our own up there. This is us there at high altitude trying to keep warm. And everything was going great. We had like trained for this decently well. And so we were healthy the whole way until, you know, had some bad soup that led to some sickness. But I didn't get sick till I got to base camp. I went to Khumbu Icefall. This was us. Just about at 17,500, 18,000 feet, started snowing on us when we were going up there. I actually arrived in Everest Base Camp on my birthday, which is cool. A bunch of strangers, you know, saying happy birthday to me. My brother brought some candles to hold by the base camp rock there. It was an awesome experience. But like I said, I got sick. So this is the only picture of someone throwing up they're going to show at the Super Summit. But it was also funny. My brother was laughing. I was laughing. It's like, how can you not laugh? So I had the walk of shame on the mule part of the ride home. And we tried to call an emergency helicopter, and they said, nope, there's a blizzard, we can't come. So spent the night in a 7-degree lodge with no heating, just sitting up all night with a migraine and things I won't explain happening to me. And then the next morning, our scheduled helicopter took us back to Kathmandu. And we had a great time on the trip, and it was just awesome. And doing outdoor adventures, epic trips, things that your kids will never forget, that you'll never forget, going with guy friends, backpacking, ski trips, et cetera. You know, a lot of us love to do that stuff. And we do it once a year, or twice a year, you know, why not more? So I don't have time to go over all the insights from it, but reality is if you're in this room, you really have nothing to complain about versus most people that live in Nepal and many countries, right? And we could all be doing more exciting things probably in our lives. So I showed the example of Michael Jordan. We talked about billionaires, but he went to practice at 5 a.m. the day after winning a championship. And one of the rookies on the team showed up at 7 a.m. And the rookie said, what are you doing, Michael? You're the champion. You're the MVP. We just won the championship. What are you doing here, you know, practicing at 7 a.m.? And Michael said, better question is, where were you 2 hours ago? Why aren't you here working harder than me? And people would say, oh, well, you don't need to read more books, or you don't need to host more events, or you don't need to get up and practice at 5 a.m. Why would you do that? If he didn't do that, then he wouldn't be the MVP. Then he wouldn't be a billionaire today. But that's in his DNA and in his work ethic. And in college, they told him, you have talent, you're good, but you're not that good. You have to work really hard if you want to be the best that ever played at this university. And he said, you've never seen hard work. I will show you hard work, and I'll work harder than anyone you've ever met. And then he's done that since. So we had someone from the FBI come to our membership here in the Investor Club. They asked the worst question you could ask. They said, hey, we want to do this and that, and how do we stand out? Because we're really good at background checks and investigations. I said, well, create an amazing data room due diligence package on yourself. Show off how good you are in due diligence by looking at every nook and cranny at yourselves, and then show that package to investors. And their question was the worst you could ask. They said, oh, is that what everyone does? I was like, no, that's the whole point. If I just told you what everyone does, You know, what, how is that helping you at all? At best, you're going to be average. So if you ever find yourself doing that, you need to know what everyone does because that's table stakes, but you need to innovate in a way that makes somebody care about what you're doing and not just have the goal of doing what everyone does. That's almost never the right goal to have, right? I respect people with like a champion mindset. My friend Ricardo Giannini is a national jiu-jitsu champion. He was here with us yesterday. I think he's going to be here at lunch starting today. Paul Carger, you saw on stage yesterday on the panel with me. He's the only one in the conference with that nice purple velvet vest there. He's one of my good friends. He manages over $8 billion at age 46. If you are a Navy SEAL or an Eagle Scout or Olympian, and many of you in the room who are not any of those things, but to be those things or even to be a doctor, it takes grit. It takes seeing things through. So we look for that in people. And it doesn't have to be one of those official titles. I think Ray Jr. is here with us today, the son of Sugar Ray Leonard. He's connected to many athletes. He's helping us with the pro athlete interview series. You talk to him and get to know him, you can see it in his DNA that he has a champion mindset. And we look for that in people, and I think investors do and partners do as well. So it doesn't necessarily need to be one of those titles of, oh, you're an Olympian or pro athlete, et cetera. But that type of tenacity is what's needed to do well in business and in investments as well. This is me in the Boy Scouts before my growth spurt. I was probably like 15 years old in this picture, by the way, because I got the 12 and under menu until I had my driver's permit, I remember. That was fun. So I already went over that. I already talked about Mark. Here's the corny quote that's related to this topic. It's not so much what you believe, it's how hard you believe it. Because you can believe that you want to do something, but actually doing it is the hard part. Executing is the hard part. Everyone in society has amazing ideas on their couch watching TVs. It's getting off your couch and doing all the work for a decade that makes it happen. Otherwise, the idea is worth nothing at all. If you haven't watched the Arnold documentary, you got to watch it. The opening quote summarizes the three episodes. He says that throughout my whole life, I've been able to visualize what I want to become. And because I can see it so clearly, it seems more realistic that I just work really hard and focus on that, that over a decade, it'll become true. And then you see that throughout his life. He was walking through Austria in Vienna, I think it was, and saw a poster. He went to go see the Hercules movie, and he tore one of the posters off the wall and put it in his bedroom wall. And he said, I want to train, and I want to be, what's it called, the global bodybuilding championship, Olympus or something like that. But he wanted to get that world title, and then he wanted to be Hercules, and he got that world title in weightlifting, and then he became Conan, and then he became Terminator, and then he was the highest paid male actor on planet Earth, and it was all from visualization coming out of Austria. McGregor Forever, and then another documentary on Conor McGregor is on Amazon Prime, all about visualization, aiming where you want to go, and just working doggedly at it until you get there. Don't have time to cover that. Already showed the books. We're going to bring up a quick survey. If you can get your phones out, they're going to bring up a little Slido. There'll be a number here. You can type in that Slido number or use that QR code. But how much did all of you spend on optimizing your health last year? This is related to Ken Newman's talk yesterday. But was it zero? Is it $3,000 to $10,000? Is it $10,000 to $20,000? Is it $20,000 plus? Maybe this is health optimization tests, coaching, nutrition planning, et cetera. So let's give about 10 more seconds to answer that since I've got so many slides to flip through here. Appreciate everyone answering. Okay, great. We've got just a little bit about 70 people replying so far. So it's a pretty good representation of the room here. So the good news is only 3% spent zero on their health. A third of the room spent $3,000 to $10,000. Okay. 24% of the room spent $1,000 to $3,000. So let's take that number for a second, and then we can switch back to the slides anytime. Thank you. A fourth of the room spent $1,000 to $3,000 on your health. Probably between travel, hotel, airplane, membership dues, you spent that much to come to this one conference. So for at least for a quarter of the room, you spent as much on your health in the whole last year as you spent just coming to this one conference. And while we want you to be here, you're going to be here longer if you invest more in your health than you did coming to this one conference, right? The longer you're here, the better, the more value we add to you at this event. Then the word spreads that we're just adding value wherever we can and just trying to be helpful, because the more you do well, then the more you're going to want to be a member of the club and help our other members do well. So the point here is that the average person invests way less in their health than they do in silly things like their car. I've got a client who has 80 employees. He literally owns a Ferrari and he eats Wendy's every day for lunch. He won't go to a normal car wash because it's a Ferrari. When he gets an oil change, it's $2,300, right? But he won't spend $1,700 or even $900 on an inside tracker biomarker health and get 50 biomarkers and have a nurse come to his house and it takes 3 minutes to draw the blood and you get all these biomarkers on your health, right? So many people spend more on their car than they do their health on checkups. I was at a conference of 140 doctors and I said, and it costs $30,000 a year to join. I said, who spent $30,000 on their health last year? One hand went up. So 139 doctors who work in healthcare spent more on their wealth than their health. If you die, you probably get taxed. It's probably not a good thing for you and everyone around you. You stop earning money. No one around you wants to die earlier and have a little bit more money, right? And if you have high energy, you're probably going to make more money. It's not ultra healthy or ultra wealthy. It's if you're ultra healthy, you probably become more ultra wealthy and attract good people around you, right? So that's really critical. And I wanted to do the survey to show the numbers, because if you add up all the ones that are the 1 to 3,000 or below, it's over half the room spent more on this one event than your health the whole last year. So I think that's important to point out. So are you investing more in your car than your health? Are you investing more in your wealth than your health? Those are important questions to ask yourself. I've got 28 ways to invest in your health. Talk to your doctor before you do anything for the rest of your life that anyone suggests that could impact your health, of course. These are just things, me sharing my personal journey. We can send you that list if you'd like. Just shoot me an email saying ultra healthy list, or send Jennifer the email. We'll get that over to you. The coolest one is doing a voluntary MRI scan, and then they can identify, you know, nodules on your pancreas or white spots on your brain or other things. And lots of times you catch things early, then you can manage them or remove that risk versus saying, oh, I wish I would have known. But your doctor is not going to order you an MRI unless you have acute severe symptoms. Or if you're fortunate enough to be wealthy enough to be here in the room, you could probably afford a once every 1 or 2 year voluntary MRI. And how many people in here have had one of those before voluntarily? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's probably another 6 I just can't see because of the bright lights, but maybe 18, 20 people out of hundreds and hundreds of people. So that's something to consider. Joe Williams, far from average, as you know. I've seen him on stage. You'll see him again on stage soon. These are some ways that I'm trying to work smart and hard. And I'm not going to read it off. You can have access to the slides. Every morning I start out with a laminated one-pager while I'm shaving. I read my monthly, quarterly, annual goals, people I look up to, and some ways I want to operate my brain. That really helps me be less average. We talked about that yesterday. I want to get to one key slide here, and then I'll finish up. So what I want to do is just show in my life what are different ways I'm trying to de-risk being average in some parts of my life. Like with health, I showed you the spreadsheet, 28 ways I'm trying to invest in my health. Not all of them are done yet. I don't have like a parasitologist that I trust or know yet. I'd like to find one, for example. I get like dental cleaning every 3 months, something as simple as that. I get the blood markers done twice a year, et cetera. But some of these other areas are going on 6 to 8 epic adventures a year, getting up early in the morning. It's a typical routine. Every summer I travel for about 60 days with my whole family. These are things that make life more fun, more enjoyable, less average, get better results. And my talk at the end of today is how to have the most fun year of your life. And it's connected to some of the messaging here, but I go into how it can make you much more profitable, make your investments work much better for you, because it ties into everything in your business, not just having fun on your time off work. So that was the message I wanted to share with you. It's a lot crammed into 15 minutes. 18 minutes because I went over, but I hope you got one or two things out of that you could relate to or take away from today or share with a family member.